folded his arms around himself, then jogged back down the hallway and into the closest room. He found a chair beside the bed. It was made of wood, and its structure was still sound, so he carried it back down the stone hallway and placed it so that its back was jammed below the door's handle. It was a sad substitute for a real lock, but he hoped it would help. Bran was prepared to kill to keep whatever is in the tower inside. I'll have to trust that there's a good reason for that. As Daniel moved down the stairs to the foyer, he rolled a word around in his mind. Trust. He'd trusted Kyle, and his cousin had taken advantage of it and tried to destroy Daniel's new life for the sake of personal gain. Kyle was his cousin, a man he'd thought was his friend, and had been his roommate for 6 months. Bran was a stranger, a man whose face he'd never seen. Daniel prayed he wasn't being a fool for putting his trust in his peculiar, dangerous employer. The cat had left its seat by the fire. Daniel scanned the foyer for it, but it must have either gone upstairs or found somewhere to hide. He placed an extra log on the flames to give the cat some warmth if it returned. Then he left Kyle's satchel and backpack folded neatly by the door.
"Bran! Again, I'm sorry for what happened. If there's anything I can do to make this right, tell me. Or, write a note or something."
He felt like a fool, yelling into the seemingly deserted house. This time, he didn't even wait for a reply before picking up the cloth bag of potted lilies and moving into the garden. His progress on the path between the manor and Annalise's grave hadn't gotten far, but days of walking between them had begun to wear a patch in the weeds, making it easier to find his way. He felt tired down to his bones, but he wanted to do one more thing before returning to the cottage. The ground outside the crypt was bare without the thorny bushes he'd torn away, and he wanted to fill it with something beautiful. He knelt in the soft ground around the stones and dug holes with his bare hands. He separated the lilies out of their pots, working the roots free gently, and tucked them into their new homes. "This will look nice." He sat on his heels to admire the result. The lush lilies and dark ivy contrasted beautifully, and the effect would only improve as the plants grew. A hint of color came from inside the crypt's seating area, and Daniel rose to investigate it. Someone had placed a small bouquet of wildflowers below the door set into the back of the enclave. They were delicate and fragile, and the bunch held no more than 5 stems, but Daniel was moved by the sight. Clearing this area wasn't just for Annalise's sake. Bran must visit her. He backed out of the tomb and entered the path leading back to the cottage. It was still early afternoon, but exhaustion and stress compounded on each other until he felt ready to drop. He washed quickly at his sink, but couldn't muster the energy to light a fire before he fell into bed. Daniel groaned and rolled over. His neck and shoulders were stiff, and a throbbing headache pulsed behind his temple. It was hard to tell the time with the curtains blocking out the moon's angle, but he guessed there were still a few hours before morning. He'd slept a long while and felt dozy enough to fall back under.
Tip, tip, tip.
He sat upright as the noise and its significance penetrated his sleep-fogged mind. Annalise. He rolled out of bed, hunted for his shoes in the dark, then gave up, and tiptoed across the cold floor to reach the window. He pulled the curtain back and found Annalise on the other side. She was fainter than she'd been the night before, but at least there was no trace of the blind terror she'd worn. Colorless eyes stared up at Daniel, and her lips twitched into a mischievous smile. Then she sprang away, dancing between the trees, her long hair and dress floating behind her, as though she'd been suspended into a world without gravity. The girl hid behind a tree. Long, pale fingers crept around the edge of the trunk, followed by one side of her face as she peeked at him. Then she leapt away again. He thought she might be laughing. Daniel grinned. "Came to say hello, did you? I hope you liked the flowers." She darted in and out of the trees, sometimes drawing near before dancing away again. Daniel watched for a few minutes, then went to light his fire and boil a cup of something warm. He guessed Annalise wanted to play and was trying to lure him into a game of hide-and-seek, but he wasn't sure Bran would approve of it, so he stayed in his cottage and contented himself with watching her through the window. "Who would have thought I'd live in a haunted garden, and not mind?" Daniel rubbed his bare feet together to get some warmth into them as he sat beside the window. Annalise skirted around the house, occasionally tapping on the walls to tell him where she was. When she came close to the window, Daniel tapped back and was rewarded with a delighted grin. She pressed one hand against the glass, and Daniel watched in fascination as tiny splinters of frost spread away from her touch. "You like Bran, don't you?" Daniel wasn't sure if she could hear or understand him, but he wanted to try communicating with more than just knocking. The girl bit her lip and nodded. The motion was unguarded, and Daniel sipped at his drink. "You were frightened for him last night, weren't you? You were afraid he might be hurt." The ghost tilted her head and squeezed her lips together. He tried again. "Last night, when you woke me, you were scared that a stranger was in the house. You didn't like him." Again, Annalise failed to give him an affirmative response. The joy had faded from her face, though, as though a bad memory had dispelled the happy energy. Daniel felt guilty for killing her playful delight. A theory had started to grow, though, and he pursued it. "Or were you afraid of what the man might do?" Daniel put his mug aside. "Were you scared he was going to open a door? Didn't you want him going into the tower?" A glimpse of the previous night's terror flashed through the girl's eyes. She looked over her shoulder, towards the tower above the house, and Daniel followed her gaze. Someone had lit a candle in Craven Manor's tower. Through the pale glow, he could see a figure pacing past the window, back and forward, with even, measured steps. Suddenly, it stopped and turned, and he knew it was looking towards his cottage. A sickening sense of dread curled through his stomach. "Who is it, Annalise?" He turned towards the girl, but she'd vanished. He was alone with the silhouette in the window, two strangers watching each other. Daniel tried to swallow, but the muscles in his throat didn't want to work. Instead, he yanked the curtain back into place to block the phantom's view. "It needs to stay trapped in the tower." Shivers had set in, and Daniel dragged his chair across the room to sit in front of the fire. He could feel the heat on his limbs, but it didn't permeate far and left his core thoroughly frozen. He remembered the fingers scratching at the door, back and forth, incessant and desperate. Daniel didn't like to think about what sort of creature needed four bolts to be contained, or what would happen since only one was left. He stayed huddled over the fire until early dawn shed its rays across the closed curtains, and his aching limbs and throbbing head pulled him back into sleep. He slipped in and out of consciousness, half falling out of his chair. When he finally shook himself out of his stupor, he found a note had been slid under his door. Chapter 17. Daniel pushed out of his chair. He hadn't heard anyone approach the door, but he already knew who the note was from. The thick envelope and small, neat letters spelling Daniel's name identified his employer like a fingerprint. Though he could be my ex-employer by now. Daniel ran his fingers across his chin as he picked up the letter. It was weighty, but held a single sheet of paper. Daniel fished the note out. Heartache dropped his shoulders before he even read the words. There was no way a letter that short, only 10 words, could be anything except a brusque dismissal. He blinked blurred, stinging eyes as he struggled to read the tight cursive. When he finished, he read it again, confusion and doubt making him certain he'd misunderstood some part of it. Except there wasn't enough to misunderstand.
"Mr. Kane, scatter salt across the tower door's threshold. Bran."
Daniel blinked, pinched the bridge of his nose, then read the message a fourth time, in case his eyes were playing tricks on him.
"This is it? He's not even going to mention Kyle's robbery? No warnings, no recriminations, no forgiveness? Just a task that makes no sense?"
He wasn't going to complain. He still had his job, as far as he could tell, though it felt painfully precarious. He wished Bran had elaborated even just a little bit. Was he still planning to fire Daniel, but wanted to do it face to face? Or was his employer ignoring the invasion entirely? Daniel made to slide the note back into its envelope, but it still held some weight. He squeezed the pocket open and found 2 gold coins inside.
"No way. This means he really does intend to keep me, right? He'd already paid me for my first week here. Now these must be the wages for the upcoming 7 days. And he didn't even garnish them. How about that?"
Daniel reverently placed the note on the desk before changing into warmer clothes and pulling on his boots. Despite the throbbing head and broken sleep, he felt invigorated. He jogged to Craven Manor and didn't even care as drips of freezing water fell off the branches and trickled through his hair. He leapt up the steps and into the foyer. His good mood was probably influencing his opinion, but the cobweb-coated space seemed a little less depressing than normal. The black cat occupied its place by the fire. Only charcoal remained, but a hint of warmth still radiated from the hearth, and the cat was pressed as close as it could without sitting in the grate. It was curled into a tight little ball as it tried to conserve heat.
"It might not like the food, but I can still curry its favor with warmth."
Daniel knelt beside the cat and relit the fire. The cat peeked its eyes open to watch him, but didn't try to move away.
"There we go, little guy."
Daniel's fingers itched to scratch its head, but he resisted.
"Baby steps.
Your owner has let me live another day. He wants me to salt a door, which seems like a strange thing to do, but I'd gladly throw some pepper on it as well, if he asked me to. Only problem? I have no idea if they keep salt in this place. I bet you'd know where to find it, wouldn't you?" The cat's bones rippled under the fur as it adjusted its position. Daniel tried to smile, but the expression felt flat. He'd grown fond of the cat, but its malnourished state still disturbed him. It wasn't young. He'd heard that sometimes animals deliberately starved themselves when they grew too old, and he prayed that wasn't what was happening.
"If I see Bran again, I'll talk to him about it. Maybe he'll let me take the cat to a vet."
Daniel stayed until the fire was strong enough to be left untended. Then he lit a candle from the mantelpiece and went to look for salt. In a worst-case scenario, he could bike to town, exchange one of the new coins for cash, and pick up a bag from the store. But it would save a lot of time if Craven Manor already had some. He started his search in the most likely candidate, the kitchens. He found bags of weevil-devoured flour and oats, a bag of sugar, and small boxes of desiccated tea leaves, plus countless jars of preserves. Curious, he picked up one of the bottles. Its label had faded into illegibility, and when he swished it, an array of vague shapes swirled through a dark amber liquid. They could have been severed toes for all he knew, and he put them back on the shelf. The kitchens didn't hold any trace of salt, and Daniel spent a few minutes checking the surrounding rooms, the mess hall, the washing room, and the dining room, without luck. He was resigned to walking to town when he caught sight of a narrow door in the back of the mess hall. He opened it, expecting to find a cupboard, and instead stepped into a small room filled with Hessian sacks. Dark ink had been used to write salt across their fronts, and Daniel lifted his eyebrows. There were half a dozen bags in the room, and each one was about as large as his torso. That's a lot of salt. Maybe it snows during winter, and they used it to clear the road. Or maybe they just like really, really salty food. He fetched a rusted knife from the kitchens and sliced a hole in the top of one of the bags. A crust had formed where moisture had leaked through the porous material, but once he broke through it, he found the salt underneath was still soft. He collected a saucepan that had survived the centuries of neglect and shoveled handfuls of salt into it. Bran's request had been vague enough to make Daniel nervous. He worked best with explicit instructions that he could follow to the letter. Telling him to scatter salt across the tower's threshold left him with all sorts of questions, such as how much, where exactly, and the most obvious one, why. He erred on the side of caution and brought half a saucepan of the grainy substance. Daniel held the saucepan in one hand and a candle in his other as he climbed the stairs. Shadows were progressing over the walls as morning transformed to afternoon. Darkness had fallen over Annalise's portrait again, and all Daniel could see of the image were the wide whites of her eyes. He slowed as he reached the third floor's landing. Straight ahead were the short stone walkway and the black door with its broken locks and white cross. Even from where he stood at the top of the stairs, he could hear the scraping, scrabbling noise coming from the other side of the wood. The sense of foreboding crashed over him and tightened his chest until it was hard to draw air. "It will be fine. Go and season the door, just like regular people do all the time." He stepped closer. The scraping had taken on a different cadence than the night before. It now held the cracking undertones of splintering wood. Daniel had a sudden mental image of the door being chipped down millimeter by millimeter by the unseen being's nails. How long until it dug through the door? And what would happen when it did? He half ran the final three steps to the door. Desperation to do his job and get away from the nauseating hallway overwhelmed him. He dropped to his knees and looked down. The line of glittering crystal formations was still visible in the low light, and realization clicked into place. Someone had poured salt 3 decades before, but moisture had melted it and reformed it into the elaborate crystal structures. That gave him a guideline for his work, at least. He dunked his hand into the salt and pulled out a fistful. Starting on the left side of the door, he dribbled a thick, unbroken line from the wall and across the passageway, trying to get it as close as he could to the base of the tar-black door. The scratching noise changed. It became faster, harsher, fiercer. Hairs rose across the back of Daniel's neck as he ran his salt line to the opposite wall. He didn't stop until the white grains butted up against the stone, but he still held some of the powder in his fist. On an impulse, he threw it at the door. The salt scattered against the dark wood, and a loud, gurgling, wailing sound emanated from behind it. Daniel pressed his hands against his ears to block it out, but the macabre scream had gotten inside his skull. He felt as though he would never escape from it. The noise was angry and grieving, and the emotions in it made him want to cower into a ball. Then it faded, and the stone hallway was silent again. Daniel found he was panting. He knelt there for several minutes, waiting for the scratching to start up again, but the tower remained silent.
"Mr. Kane."
Daniel startled at his name and twisted to look behind himself. His candle lit only the few feet around him, but at the end of the hallway, in the juncture where the stairs' landing split into the hallways, he thought he could see a silhouette.
"Hello?"
"Come and speak in my office.
The room at the end of the hallway. The voice was too distinct to mistake. Bran's crackling, gasping voice sounded worse when magnified by the empty halls. The silhouette turned and stepped out of sight. Daniel's throat was too dry for his answer to be louder than a whisper.
Okay.
Clutching his candle, he rose onto unsteady legs and trotted back to the crossroads. He couldn't see Bran. Daniel took a bracing breath, then turned left, the direction Bran had vanished into. Craven Manor's hallways seemed to extend for miles. Daniel knew it was only his racing pulse and stress that made them seem endless, but it was hard not to feel dwarfed by the patterned walls that squeezed on either side. In his candle's light, the open door at the end of the hall looked like an abyss. Even when he reached its threshold, his light couldn't penetrate more than a patch of the long decayed rug covering the room's wooden floor. Bran?
Enter.
He stepped inside and flinched as the door glided shut behind him. He didn't think it was his imagination that the candle had lost strength inside Bran's study. He caught glimpses of a bookcase full of rotting volumes on one wall and a cold fireplace on the other. A massive window, easily two arm spans wide, took up the opposite wall, but its heavy drapes were drawn, blocking out the light. Daniel still couldn't see Bran.
Light the fire, then sit.
The words came out of the darkest corner of the room. When Daniel stared at it, he thought he saw the glint of two eyes. He quickly turned away and knelt on the hearth. His fingers shook. Even with bone-dry kindling and practice using flint, he struggled to start a fire.
Ease your mind.
The cracked voice hadn't lost its formality, but the tone sounded a fraction softer.
This discussion is for your benefit.
Terrific, Daniel managed.
The kindling caught. He waited until the flames were large enough, then he placed a thin log on top. The two wingback chairs on the fireplace rug were a long way through the decomposition process, but Bran had told him to sit, and Daniel still had concerns about how easily his body might sail through the massive window. He shuffled backwards into one of the chairs. A floorboard creaked as Bran paced around him. Daniel dared to glance around the side of the chair, but the fire's light couldn't stretch any farther than his candle had.
Unnatural shadows.
He shuddered and turned back to the flames. There's something not right with this room.
I wish to speak with you on several topics, Bran said. But, most pressingly, the entity in the tower.
Daniel licked dry lips.
What is it?
My burden. My curse.
Bran had drawn close without Daniel realizing. A change of tension in the chair's fabric told him Bran had placed his hand on its back.
Eliza Myrix.
Chapter 18. Daniel wanted to tilt his head back to see the fingers resting on the fabric above his head, but he resisted the temptation. Every nerve in his body felt twitchy with anxiety, and he had to curl his toes to keep his legs still.
I was starting to suspect it might be. Is she a ghost, too?
Wood creaked as the hand moved away.
I am not certain. She is not alive, at any rate.
Curiosity ate at him, but Daniel forced himself to exercise patience as he waited for his companion to continue. Bran paced the room twice before he spoke again.
Eliza Myrix believed evil spirits stalked her. Salt has long been used to cleanse ground and ward off bad spirits, and Eliza stored immense quantities in her private pantry and used it liberally. When she became paranoid that Annalise was a witch, she tried to force the girl to eat it. Annalise became sick as she tried to swallow the salt, and that was when Eliza chose to burn her to death. Nausea rose alongside the horror, and Daniel pressed a hand over his mouth. When Eliza Myricks perished, she did not leave the earth, but stayed behind as a twisted version of herself. Ironically, salt now works to keep her sealed in her tower. I am concerned about the door's durability since your friend tried to open it, but it seems to be holding, for now.
Again, I'm really, really sorry about what happened.
As am I. It was not my intention to harm your companion, but he broke through the window during the struggle, and I could not stop his fall.
You weren't trying to kill him?
No. Simply remove him from the vicinity of the tower. It is vital that the door remain sealed.
I can buy some new locks.
The locks were unique. Their manner of preparation cannot be reproduced.
Bran's voice was emotionless, but his feet continued to carry him across the floor in slow, even loops.
What is done is done. You were careless, but not malicious. I trust you will learn from the experience, so we will not dwell on it.
You're not... Daniel tried to find a more appropriate word, but settled for... angry?
I have lived for some time now, Mr. Kane, and it has given me appreciation for how insignificant many of our daily trials are. You will not find me lacking in patience.
Again, Daniel tried to look around the back of his chair. The fire had grown, but so had the shadows. They warred through the room, and, contrary to nature, the shadows were winning.
You're dead, aren't you?
The words escaped him before he could stop them. Bran chuckled, and the rasping noise drew goosebumps across Daniel's flesh.
I am not a ghost, if that is what you are wondering. But I am not alive either.
What are you then?
Bran was silent for so long that Daniel began to imagine he'd disappeared. But then the man said,
Open the curtains, if you wish.
A queasy dread filled Daniel as he crossed to the massive window. Its curtains were stiff with age and thick enough to block out every hint of sunlight. He gripped one half and dragged it back. Blinding light raced through the shadows and highlighted the clouds of dust he'd inadvertently shaken out of the fabric. He pulled back the second curtain, and finally, the room and its contents were laid bare to see. A large mahogany table, ringed with three chairs and covered with thick dust, stood to one side. The space above the fireplace had been invisible in the earlier shadows, but Daniel saw empty picture frames hung there. The volumes filling the bookcase looked expensive. Most had gold on their spines or were bound in thick leather. A man stood in front of the desk, facing Daniel. He wore a charcoal vest and a long black coat, both looking as though they dated to the early 1800s. Black hair was swept back from his temple and curled at the base of his neck. His face was long, like the fingers clasped ahead of himself, and his lips were thin. Daniel swallowed an involuntary gasp. He battled with his fear and won, but only just barely, as he pressed his back against the window. In some ways, Bran appeared to be a young man, no older than 30, but in others, he was ancient. Dark shadows underlined his eyes, which were heavy-lidded and dull. His lips were cracked, his cheeks sunken. He had no wrinkles or creases that came with age, but his skin was paper-thin, ashen gray, and mapped entirely with black veins. It gave the impression that his skin was cracked like parchment. The lips twitched with bleak humor.
I have not aged well, have I?
No, that's not... Daniel bit his tongue before he could say anything stupid. He couldn't stop from staring, even though he knew it wasn't polite. It took a moment to drag his scattered thoughts back together. You said Eliza Myricks was buried by her sole living relative. That was you, wasn't it? The head tilted in a graceful nod, and Bran's hair shifted as though weightless, much like Annalise's did.
Correct. You have been curious about my family's history, and I feel the time has come that I must share it with you. Eliza Myricks was my mother, much as I rue the fact. I did not know her well. She sent me to a boarding school when I was 8, and refused to take me back between terms. For more than a decade, I was moved from institution to institution, largely based on my mother's whims, as she decided an establishment was ungodly and would corrupt my mind, and I only saw her twice during my adolescence.
Bran moved away from the table and started pacing again. It struck Daniel as something like a compulsive habit.
When I completed my education at age 20 and returned home, I was alarmed to find Annalise, my younger sister, no longer lived in the house. I asked my mother what had happened to her. She insisted I had never had a younger sister.
He laughed, and the wheezing, gasping noise seemed to struggle out of his throat.
I went through the whole mansion looking for proof that Annalise had lived here. I had only been 8 the last time I saw her, but I refused to believe she was a figment of my imaginations. My mother had been scrupulous about removing signs of her life, though. Every picture frame that had once contained a painting of her was barren. Her bedroom had been turned into a washroom. She had been erased. Totally and completely.
Daniel couldn't bring himself to leave the window. The sun was insipid and filtered through a century of grime caked to the glass, but it felt safe. It protected him from the shadows that seemed to sprout from Bran like a dozen discordant spider legs. As Bran grew angrier, the shadows became darker and longer. Some flitted across the floor, others crawled up the walls, and one dared to creep up towards the fireplace's grate. When it touched the flames, they began dying with a series of pained hisses.
It took me weeks to find my sister, and when I did, the discovery was not joyous. Charred bones had been heaped into a pail in the tower, and the final trace of Annalise overlooked it. A portrait Eliza had commissioned just months before the girl's death. It was too large for her to easily burn alongside Annalise's clothes and possessions. So Eliza had hung it above my sister's bones in our tower, the one part of the house she always kept locked.
He held out his hands, seeming to examine them for flaws, then squeezed them so tightly that the fingers made cracking noises.
I will not conceal the truth from you. I killed my mother that day.
Daniel was surprised to see a hint of grief in Bran's eyes.
How? She was in the garden. She was raving. Paranoia and grief had made her mad. But her insanity was not pardon, and I did not show her any mercy. I approached from behind, took up a rock, and cracked her skull.
He drew a breath, then let it out, slowly.
The gardener's tools were nearby. I dug her a shallow grave beside where she had fallen, pushed her unholy corpse into it, and buried her.
But she didn't stay dead.
No.
The grief transformed into a bitter smile.
As I said during our dinner, things that die here have a tendency to linger.
Daniel tore his eyes away from Bran and fixed them on the fire. The rogue shadow had retreated from it, and the flames were recovering. So you used the salt to trap her in the tower, but she's still trying to get out, even 200 years later?
That is correct. She has never rested. I do not know if she ever will. I chose to stay in the manor and do what I could to contain her. I used not just salt, but also bolts that belonged to the church she had once knelt in. They seemed to work.
Bran crossed to stand beside Daniel and looked out into the garden. His features tightened with weariness.
I soon found I was not alone in the manor. Once I had interred my sister's bones in the family crypt and carved her name over the door, I began to see her spirit running through the garden at night. I would sit with her and talk for hours. She cannot speak, but she finds ways to make her opinions known.
Daniel managed a smile as he followed Bran's gaze towards the crypt.
I know what you mean. She woke me to tell me Kyle was in the house.
And moving closer to the tower door.
His cracked lips tightened.
Above all else, Annalise fears her mother. She watches the tower from the gardens, and Eliza watches the gardens from her tower. Even in death, they cannot be free of each other.
He didn't want to stare, but Daniel found his attention continuously drawn back to Bran's mapped, paper-thin skin and near-weightless hair.
Do you think you'll ever die? Properly, I mean?
I do not know. I always expected to, but days blended into months and finally years, and one day I realized I could not remember the last time I ate.
He lifted his hands. The veins were worse on them, especially around the fingertips, which were nearly black.
I have become more shadow than human. It became harder and harder to maintain my house and my garden. One evening, I carried a tray of tea out to Annalise's crypt, as was our habit, but when dawn came, I had no strength left to lift the tray and return it to the house.
Bran clenched his hands and dropped them to his side.
I can still lift light objects. Pens, letters, small flowers. In times of stress, I can exert some of my former strength, but not as much as I once possessed. I have faded. Perhaps eventually I will fade entirely and cease to exist in any realm. But for now, I still have use of this form, and a couple others beside.
Daniel frowned. Sorry, I was following right up until that last part. Other forms? Like the shadows?
Yes. Bran's heavy eyelids fluttered. And others. My mother's insanity, Annalise's sensitivity to light, and my own peculiar condition share their roots in our ancestors. We came from a line of disgraced kings and queens. Severe inbreeding left many of them with deformities and abnormalities.
Do you think that's why you and Eliza are still alive, even after death?
Perhaps.
His face was unnaturally serene, as though it had been carved out of stone.
My mother's paranoia centered around Annalise being a witch, but it was not my sister she should have been concerned about. As more of my body fades and is replaced by the shadows, I have learned to shape them. Mold them.
Daniel had been staring at the window as Bran talked. When his companion fell silent, he turned. Bran was no longer in the room. In his place, an oversized, tattered crow perched on the back of the closest chair. Daniel's mouth fell open, but no noise came out. The Crow King, the same ancient bird that had watched Daniel move in and out of the house, hopped to the edge of its chair. Its movements were stilted, suggesting an immense age. It spread its wings with a deep whirring noise and dove towards the ground. The bird never landed. Instead, the bone-thin cat thudded into the carpet. Its amber eyes stared into Daniel's as the scruffy creature paced past him. No. Daniel's mind threw up a blanket objection to what he was seeing. He staggered away from the animal and pressed his palms into his closed eyelids. I'm going crazy.
No more than I have during this last century.
Daniel removed his hands from his eyes, and Bran stood before him once again. His skin was a shade paler, and the shadows around his eyes were a fraction deeper. He spread his arms in a shrug.
Some of our ancestors, the early Vikings, kings and queens before their disgrace, called themselves shapeshifters. This is a trait I appear to have inherited.
Okay. Daniel's mouth agreed, but he found himself shaking his head. Shapeshifter. Sure. Bran's cracked lips stretched into a smile.
It is not a gift I possessed during life. As the years moved on, and I began to feel less human and more shadow, I found my form malleable. Shadows are more liquid than solid, after all. I pour myself into a fresh mold. It is not magic, and it is not alarming. It just is.
I'm glad you don't find it alarming, but Daniel felt heat rush across his face as he remembered all of the embarrassing things he'd cooed to the cat.
Oh no. I'm so sorry.
For what?
Bran began pacing again.
For trying to pet you.
The heat increased until Daniel felt as if his face might be glowing.
For making that joke about you being named after cereal.
Rasping laughter filled the room. Bran clasped his hands behind himself as he turned to loop around the desk again.
Do not apologize. You have a compassionate soul. I cannot eat, but I have rather enjoyed the fires.
Okay.
The word escaped as a squeak.
Do you know why I chose you to tend to our garden?
Bran tilted his head as he regarded Daniel.
I would not have invited just anyone into our property. I wanted someone who would place others' needs ahead of their own. One day, while I was in the town, I found a man sitting on the street. He had no home, no money, nothing of his own except a dirty blanket and a sandwich someone had given him. When he saw me, he pulled the meat out of the bread and offered it to me. I knew I had found my helper.
Daniel frowned. He was sure he would have remembered giving someone his food, especially a person who looked as distinctive as Bran. Then it clicked.
The dog!
Bran smirked. The coal-black mutt had been so skinny that Daniel had been shocked it was still walking. It had glanced at his sandwich as it passed him on the street. Daniel had been hungry, but not so hungry that he could forgive himself for letting the animal starve. He'd pulled the steak out of the sandwich and held it out to the dog. The mutt had carried it off, tail wagging, while Daniel contented himself with the leftover bread.
That was only a couple of days before Kyle found me, he remembered.
When I had arranged your accommodation and returned with your letter, you were gone. I traveled into town often, searching for you, but time does not behave for me the way it used to. It blurs together now. It must have been several weeks before I found you again.
6 months. Daniel gave an awkward shrug. You found me in the end, though, right?
Yes.
Bran paused by the window for a second before resuming his track around the desk.
There have been mistakes, but your intentions are sound. You have cared for Annalise, though she is no longer alive. I am more shadow than human, but you do not fear me, and you complete the tasks I request of you. I am once again able to sit with my sister in her crypt.
Daniel felt uncomfortable saying it, but he forced the words out. I like it here. I like the job. I think I'd be happy if I got to do it for a while longer.
That suits me as well, Mr. Kane.
You can call me Daniel, if you want. Brand didn't respond, and Daniel looked up from the flames to see he was, once again, alone in the room.
Chapter 19.
Daniel blew out his candle, then thrust his hands into his pockets as he left Brand's study. The hallway still seemed to dwarf him, its myriad of identical doors robbing his sense of space and time. Reaching the stairs was a relief. As he descended to the foyer, he spotted the cat sitting beside what was left of the fire he'd kindled earlier that day. A sense of surrealism washed over him. He knew the cat was Bran, but to his eyes, it was still a regular cat, one he wanted to pet and feed and chatter to. Addressing it formally felt ridiculous, but he managed a stiff nod. Bran? The cat blinked once. Bran had said he appreciated the fires, so Daniel shuffled up to the embers.
I'll get that for you.
He ground a new log into the coals and waited as it heated and caught. The cat sat beside him, silent and detached, as the flames lit its amber eyes. Daniel cleared his throat.
I should get back to work, I suppose.
He waited for Bran to shift into his human form to say goodbye, but he didn't. Maybe being a cat was less tiring, or maybe Bran had gone so long without human contact that social norms no longer bothered him. The situation was too surreal for Daniel, though, and he hurried into the garden.
This is going to take some effort to get used to.
Once he'd ventured far enough to be away from the crow's watchful eyes, a hysterical laugh slipped out of him. If he hadn't seen Bran change form with his own eyes, he would have thought it was some elaborate prank. He didn't even know what to call what he'd seen. Shapeshifter? Skinwalker? Werecat? It didn't take long to reach Annalise's crypt. The ground around the lilies had started to dry out and wilt the plants, so he followed the trail towards the cottage to fetch some water.
How must it feel to live for decades past your expiration, but fade a little more with every year?
Daniel thought, in some ways, it might actually be worse than death. Bran had been trapped in the aging, decaying building, with only a mute ghost for company, and a dead woman he hated scrabbling at her door. It was a recipe for insanity. Daniel didn't have a watering can, so he filled up a pot with water from the tap. He'd told Bran he would be happy to continue on in the job, and that was the honest truth. A small kernel of worry continued to dig at him, worry that Bran had been lying when he'd said he hadn't intended to hurt Kyle, but Daniel was mostly successful in repressing it. He wanted to trust his unusual host. Lost in thought, he completed the trek back to the lilies and gently sloshed water around the plants. His mind was still tangled around Kyle. Without a phone, Daniel had no way of checking up on his cousin's condition or talking to him.
How much did he see? He hadn't considered that question before, and it created knots in his stomach.
He let the last of the water fall out of the pot as he straightened and turned towards the tower. Is Kyle going to remember what happened? Or will it be lost in the haze of drunkenness? He hadn't been at blackout levels, and the fall would be hard to forget. Kyle's personality made him a wild card. He would either forget everything or lock on to the memory with the same level of obsession he showed when playing video games.
Will it be a problem if he does remember? There was no light inside the tower, but Daniel thought he could see the woman inside, pressed close to the glass. He turned away and marched towards his cottage. Will Kyle go to the police? Would anyone believe him if he told them a man made out of shadow tossed him through a window? Even describing the house, an ancient, crumbling manor forgotten in the forest, would cause skepticism. And the doctors were already concerned about what the fall might have done to his mind. Daniel dropped the empty pot onto the crypt's bench. Intense tiredness suddenly hit him, and he sagged onto the seat. Kyle might never have full use of his brain again, because of me. Daniel had told him about the house and showed him the gold. He should have known Kyle would want some for himself. And what if he tells people about Bran and the house, and they really do think he's having delusions? Will he be put into a mental institute, his freedom stripped away, and kept on heavy sedation? Daniel had intended to have dinner when he returned to the cottage, but at that point he felt too sick. If Kyle suffered, if his life was ruined, it would be because of Daniel's carelessness. I all but invited him into the dragon's lair. His eyes burned, and he scuffed his feet across the crypt's stone floor. If he tried to protect Kyle by corroborating his story, that would mean betraying Bran, or worse, being locked up and sedated himself. There had to be a solution that resulted in no harm to anyone. He might be able to convince Kyle he'd imagined the whole event, or that it was a prank gone wrong. Kyle would hate him for what had happened, but hatred was better than being diagnosed with delusions. Daniel needed to speak with Kyle and assess where his mind was. It was still possible his cousin didn't remember any of the evening. Amnesia, drunkenness, or even the assumption that the memories had been a dream could save the situation. And if not, Daniel would have to play it by ear. The hospital's visiting hours were over for the day. Daniel would have to wait until the next morning to speak to Kyle privately. He could only cross his fingers that Kyle hadn't already shared his story with the nurses. Daniel went to bed early that night, but nerves kept him awake until well after midnight. Annalise came to tap at his door again, and he got up to greet her. He stood by the window and watched her dart between the trees, her long, fine hair floating like a wave behind her. The shadows were too heavy to see clearly, but Daniel thought he glimpsed a large, disheveled crow in the pine above his house. Morning took an eternity to arrive. Even after losing sleep, Daniel was awake for the first rays of light glinting over the treetops. He bundled himself in layers to keep warm, then went to the manor before leaving for town. Bran deserved an explanation of where Daniel was going and why, but he still felt like an idiot as he unpacked the situation to the black cat in front of the fireplace. Bran listened, occasionally blinking, but didn't show any alarm or shift into his human form. Daniel hoped that was a sign of approval. He said goodbye and slipped back into the chilly morning. Even though he kept his pace leisurely as he walked into town, Daniel arrived before visiting hours, so he took the opportunity to exchange one of his new gold coins for cash at the pawnbroker. Then he spent the next 20 minutes wandering the streets. He felt intensely self-conscious with a small fortune tucked into his pocket, but his clothes were ill-fitting and tatty enough that no one gave him a second glance. He passed stores full of fresh, mud-free jeans and clean hoodies, but it still felt too soon to spend money on what had been classified as frivolities barely a week before. The smells wafting from the bakery were too good to resist, though. Daniel slid into one of the seats and wolfed down a fried breakfast. He tipped well, then spent the final half hour loitering outside the hospital. As soon as the clock hung from the building's tower ticked over to 10, he entered the building and asked after his cousin. The nurse, a dimpled woman who looked as though she hadn't slept in 20 hours, read the case notes for him. Kyle had woken the previous day. His cognitive abilities didn't seem impaired, but the doctors wanted to keep him for at least another few days to monitor him. The news was an intense relief. Kyle hadn't suffered permanent impairment, and the doctors wouldn't be reporting his condition favorably if he'd talked about the mansion in the forest. The nurse gave Daniel a ward and room number, and he jogged up the stairs rather than wait for the elevator. Kyle had a room to himself, and as Daniel entered, the smell of antiseptic and bleach assaulted his nose. The blinds on the small window were half-turned to reduce the sun's glare. Kyle was sitting up in bed, a tray with a biscuit and a cup of tea above his knees and his mobile in hand. Daniel couldn't help searching for changes in his cousin. Kyle's skin was a shade grayer and had lost its usual flush. His eyelids drooped, and his jowls seemed slacker than normal. The stiff white hospital gown didn't suit him. "Hey," Daniel said. He hovered in the doorway, still not certain whether his visit would be welcomed. "You came at last, huh?" Kyle tossed his mobile onto the tray next to his tea. He didn't smile, but there wasn't any trace of anger in his expression either. "Do you want a biscuit? They taste like garbage." Daniel wasn't hungry, but he didn't want to reject any olive branches either. "I'd love one. Thanks." He shuffled into the seat beside Kyle and accepted the plastic-wrapped biscuit. He turned the package over and pretended to be interested in the branding. "How are you feeling?"
"Like I got thrown through a window."
At last, Kyle's mouth twitched into a smile, but the expression didn't look honest. He held up his left arm, which was swaddled in bandages.
"They say it'll scar."
The phrase, "I'm sorry," nearly left Daniel's mouth, but he caught himself. The fall hadn't been his fault, and apologizing would be both an admission of guilt and an acknowledgement of what had happened. He didn't want Kyle to start going down that path. It would be best for everyone, including Kyle, if he stayed ignorant.
"That sucks."
"It sure does."
Kyle shuffled a little farther up his bed and rested his head back on the pillow propped behind him.
"You got yourself into a messed up situation with that house. If you want my advice, you should get out before something like this happens to you, too."
Daniel felt his heart kick up a notch, but he kept his face serene. When he spoke, his voice barely wavered.
"What do you mean?"
"You're probably hoping I didn't see anything, or that I assumed I dreamed it, or that you can convince me it was some kind of delusion."
Kyle's eyes hardened as they scanned Daniel's face.
"But I know what I saw. Bran Myrix, supposedly dead for 200 years, hauled me through that house."
Daniel tried to laugh, but the noise didn't come out right.
"His face was rotting."
Kyle's voice remained flat. There was no flicker of fear or anger in his expression, just set inevitability. It was unnerving.
Gray like a ghoul, all sunken and lumpy, nothing between the skin and the bones. "He's dead, he's got to be. But he's not staying in his grave, is he?"
Daniel's throat was too tight to swallow.
"Are you sure you didn't make a mistake? You were drunk."
Kyle picked up the phone. He tapped it twice, then held it up for Daniel to see. It showed a portrait, drawn in a style similar to Annalise's. In it, Bran's skin was supple and healthy, but the lidded eyes, long nose, and black hair swept away from the temples were unmistakable.
"No, Bran Myrix died in 1805 when a plague passed through the village."
Kyle's mouth twisted.
"Only the bastard didn't stay dead."
Chapter 20. Daniel flicked his eyes from the portrait on the phone to Kyle's face. His heart hammered against his ribs in a painful tempo.
"Have you told anyone about this?"
"What, you mean the nurses? Hell no."
Kyle pulled his phone back close to his chest.
I'm not a moron. They wouldn't believe me. But you do, because you've seen the exact same thing I have. You accepted a job from a walking corpse."
Daniel clasped his hands in his lap.